The Drew Marshall Show, reminding you that two thongs still don't make it right.
Ask me how I'm doing and I come from all their fears. I'm swearing like a trooper and I'm drinking like a bum. I'm a liberal backslider and it sure is a lot of fun.
I dedicate this song to our next guest, John Fugelsang.
Footsteps now for many years gone by. But you always upset someone there, no matter how you try. Well, the good things they're forgotten if a bad thing comes around. Now all these stones are flying, they're gonna knock me to the ground. I am a liberal backslider, sliding about 10 years. People ask me how I'm doing, and I come from all their fears. I'm swearing like a trooper, and I'm drinking like a bomb. I'm a liberal backslider, and it sure is a lot of fun. Well, I take a stand on justice, well, I take a stand on race. I'm gonna take me a TV evangelist and punch him in the face. I sing about the hope that's in me and ask why the poor aren't fed. But if I don't toe the party line, it'd be better if I were dead. I am a liberal backslider.
Well, Tim, I don't know if you remember this, but a little while ago, our video of the week were a couple of comedians talking about God.
Yes, I actually really, really enjoyed that one.
Was that not one of the better ones?
No, that's one of the better discussions about what they were talking about anywhere.
Yeah, it was fantastic stuff, and that was my introduction to this gentleman, John Fugelsang. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Fag Pimp. Hi, John.
Oh, thank you, Drew. Thank you. My favorite new nickname.
When I saw that, I thought, dude, you've made it. Like, you have made it. Once Westboro gets their sights on you, you have made it.
Yeah, it's just so forlorn, isn't it? They're so sad. It's like watching the surviving guys from Chicago tour State Fair.
Yes.
Westboro, I mean, those guys, they are to Christianity what Jesus Christ was to ignorance, hate, and inbreeding. So they have quite a record to stand on. The nice thing was the same day that they came and picketed our show in Kansas City, one of the two granddaughters who escaped last year and I believe moved to Canada,
yes.
I think Megan Phelps wrote me a very nice email. She heard me on a local radio station in Kansas and wrote me a very, very nice email.
Good,
so
good.
I'm glad that, you know, there are people getting out of the hive. And they're just a racket. I mean, I don't really know if they're as hateful as they say. Their whole grift, I'm sure you know, is that they want someone to take a swing at them or deny them the right to free speech so they can sue on a First Amendment lawsuit. They're just a bunch of, lawyer chasers.
You're right. I think, actually, the Kool-Aid plant has been moved to the Westboro Baptist Church, and they're really taken off now. I had Fred Phelps on the show a long time ago, years ago, and, you know, I just gave him rope. He just wanted to rope me into something, and I just let him have the rope. So, anyway, listen, speaking of hanging, you were hanging with a former guest on our show, Shelley Wright, not too long ago, a couple of nights ago, maybe?
Yeah, Shelley's a good friend of mine, and she asked me to come to Kansas City the other night to do a fundraiser for their LBGT Center. It was myself and Margaret Cho, who's also an old friend of mine. And at the show, the Westboro Baptist Church came out to protest, because even though Jesus never once mentioned gay people, he really hates them, and you should know that.
I like what Bill Maher said, something about, it's in that Bible you wave at people. You know, it's one of his famous lines. Now, Shelley, I don't know whether you realize this, but she took first place in the hottest lesbian Christian awards this year.
Well, she narrowly edged me out. I closely resemble K.D. Lang, and I tried to enter, but there was a swimsuit part of the competition, and I had to reveal myself.
Right.
My workout.
Right. Oh, you know who protests that competition that Shelley writes in all the time? Fred Phelps and Rosie every year protest that.
Well, you know, I'm glad. I don't have any problem. Having read the Bible, I see no problem in having a Miss Hot Lesbian Christian. There's nothing in the Bible prohibiting any of that stuff, even though I don't think those three words appear in those contexts.
No, that's right. You got to tell me about the best picture I've ever seen on anyone's Twitter feed. Patty and the Pope. Are you kidding me?
Oh, isn't that beautiful? Yeah, someone sent me that a few months ago, and it's Patty Smith. At the Vatican, I believe she was recording in Rome or doing some work in Rome, and she came out and he was walking around, and somehow she got an audience. And it's a lovely picture of Francis shaking Patty's hand, and she's just beaming at him, as a lot of people do. I think this guy is, you know, if this guy's hire was a PR move by the Vatican to, you know, have a more likable progressive guy who talks about those radical things that, you know, Jesus actually talked about. you know, Jesus, not really big on abortion or gay people or contraception, didn't really mention it ever. Mm. So this guy is actually, ironically, he's being called a liberal for being a real conservative, a Catholic. And it's great to see how many people are, you know, the dialogue's changed. No one's talking about abused altar boys anymore. They're saying, what does the Pope say about this? And it's really interesting to see the Catholic Church sort of have this Hail Mary pass that's still being relevant. And it's kind of working.
Yeah. The thing I love about that picture is the fact that it looks, I don't know, maybe I just, it's just me reading into it, but it looks like the Pope knows who Patti Smith is.
It really does. I'm sure he was probably told it was a private audience. I mean, she got to go shake his hand, so I assume it was arranged somehow.
Yeah.
And she's saying Jesus died for someone's sins, and he says, but not yours.
Nice. Also, I happen to be just secretly crushing from another country, because I don't want to end up in prison like Alec Baldwin's buddy, lady actor girl up here who just ended up, 6 months in prison for stalking Alec? Kristen Chenoweth. I just dig her so much. If you have a problem with Kristen Chenoweth, you have some serious problems. You're friends with Kristen as well, right?
I've only met her once. I've only met her once, but she's as lovely in person as her unspeakably spectacular DNA would indicate.
Yeah.
Really gorgeous human.
And not that I was creeping on you a whole lot, but I did see a little shot of a guy who's been on our show as well. Actually, Andy Kindler and I did the Vancouver Comedy Fest together 1,000 years ago. We were on a panel discussing God. It was one of those typical a Jew, an atheist, and a talk show host walk into a comedy show things. And
right.
Boy, just really appreciate that guy's heart as well. Do you hang out at all with Andy much?
When I'm in L.A., we often do the same shows. And, Andy's one of those guys who, you know, there's the comedians that you hear about, and then there's the comedians that comedians love, and if you're lucky, you'll be exposed to them. And anytime anyone can see Andy Kindler live, I mean, there's just no one like it. He's state of the art every time he goes on stage.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's the end of me, I guess, trying to think of common threads.
Oh, I went to your site. I saw we have a lot of mutual friends, so it's really a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, I don't know how to say this. This is not written down. I've got no pre-thoughts about this at all, but I'm looking for a friend. Apparently he's not going to be in. John, come on, buddy. A little quicker response to that would be nice, man. Jumping. No, what I'm trying to say is there's very few people I appreciate as quickly as I've come to appreciate you. So that's
oh, my God. Well, thank you. Yeah. Thanks. Whoever you are, I've always depended upon the idle praise of strangers. Thank you. It's funny because I come from a weird religious background, and when my mother gave me permission to talk about my parents' background in my act, it made some of my agents very nervous because I began talking about religion a lot. Hmm. And it's not the sort of thing one can easily do on TV, but I really do think that there's a spiritual hunger, at least in my country, for a different kind of dialogue about faith and about organized religion. People who've been let down by the hypocrisy of men in dresses with the hang-ups of dead guys. And I do think that all the great religious people out there aren't getting on TV. In America, the only people you see on TV are atheists and creeps screaming at women outside reproductive health clinics.
You know,
that's what happens to religion on TV.
You have just summarized many conversations I've had with the L.A. people that I'm working with. A guy by the name of Ken Hertz, who's one of the big entertainment lawyers down there. He's been with Will Smith for 100 years and Wahlberg and I don't know, all sorts of great, great people. You know, he found out about stuff that I'm doing and said exactly what you said. We need to have somebody with a microphone or television camera who isn't a shiny suited shyster selling hope to poor people, or the other end of the spectrum, Bill Maher. No, just, you know, some angry atheist guy. You know, where is the healthy dialogue about this? So anyway, I'm glad you're out there doing what you're doing. Now, you've interviewed some fantastic people, and from one interviewer to another, I've got to ask you, you know, some quick snapshots or some quick commentaries on some of these people. I mean, obviously, the George Harrison thing, I mean, that's insane. At what point were you sitting there going, is this really happening?
Well, pretty much the entire time. You know, VH1 was trying to relaunch themselves as like MTV for grown-ups, and they hired me to be a comedian and to do funny interstitial stuff, but I wound up being the only classic rock nerd they had. So I wound up interviewing all these amazing people just because that was my expertise, and it was sort of like broadcasting grad school. But I was on my way to go to London to talk to McCartney, and they said, we need you to stay in New York one extra day to talk to George Harrison and Ravi Shankar.
Right.
And George was my hero. There's no one I'd rather meet. I'd rather meet George than Bob Dylan.
Yep.
And I was blown away. And he, you know, I related to him so much about his faith. You know, in America, they say the largest growing religion is Mormonism. I think the largest growing religion in America are people who once considered themselves religious and now think of themselves as spiritual.
Yeah, you know, there's actually a category for them. They actually are now called nuns, N-O-N-E-S, and you're right. They are the fastest-growing category, nuns.
Yeah, and George was a guy who grew up Catholic and then obviously expanded his spiritual horizons, and I learned so much about Krishna, about Hinduism from George, about meditation. And he came in with Ravi and Ravi's wife, and he was promoting the Chants of India record that he had produced for Ravi Shankar. And we thought we were just going to get, you know, he'd sit down for 10 minutes, we'd get our sound bite, and he'd leave. But I was the worst interviewer of all time, and I was so nervous, and everything you're not supposed to do, I did. I stepped on him. I made inappropriate jokes about Rick Astley. You know,
Did you Rickroll George Harrison?
Oh, well, eventually, yeah, I because someone put a guitar in his hands. This girl was visiting her boyfriend on the set. When we began this, there was no one in the studio, and George stayed for 10 minutes, and he stayed for another 10 minutes. And the whole time I would ask him, you know, about God and death, what happens when you die, meditation, consciousness. You know, and the producer in my ear would be like, don't talk about this stuff. No one cares about this stuff. Ask him about John Lennon and the Beatles. And George doesn't want to talk about the Beatles.
No.
You know, anytime I brought it up, he'd give me a sneer. And so I tried to just play it talking about the stuff he wanted to dig. And at one point he says to me, this is a bit lofty for VH1, but, you know, I kept saying, why don't you perform? Don't you get that charge? Don't you get that energy from being on stage and making music and doing what you do for an audience? And he's like, no way, man. Meditation is what it's all about for me, and gardening. I have every atom in my body vibrating. It's so much better than having to go on stage and do a concert. He just didn't like it. Yeah. But a girl was visiting the set, and she put a guitar in his hands. And he wound up playing four songs. He hadn't done a concert in America in 20 years. And it was the last time he ever performed in front of a camera, because he was diagnosed with lung cancer about 2 months later. Hmm. And he did a Vedic chant with Ravi. He did a Traveling Wilburys song that Dylan had sung. He sang All Things Must Pass, the only time I know of he ever sang it live. And he did an unreleased song that wound up being the first track on the album they put out after he passed away. So when he stayed for 4 hours. And when he left, I was devastated because I knew I'd given the worst interview of all time. I'd met my idol, and I was a blubbering idiot. And they ran it, and it was like a half-hour special. They put it on at 1 in the morning. They called it George and Ravi Yin and Yang, which is insulting to one of them, I think.
Yes.
And no one watched it. Nobody ever saw it. And then when he got sick, I was in Montreal, in your fair country, doing the comedy festival, and they asked me if I would come down to recut it. Because they knew he was going to pass soon. And I thought, well, that's ghoulish, but I don't want somebody else working on it. So I came down, we recut it, and, like, you have to understand, I had met my idol, and I was a moron. I was a twit. It drove me into therapy. And I grew so much from the experience, because George talked about the emptiness of celebrity, and I was too blinded by his celebrity to hear what he was talking about. He talked about meeting Burt Lancaster and realizing he's just a human. So when it finally came out, and he died, and they re-aired it, they put back all the stuff about God and death, what happens when you die, back in. And so to this day, I'll have, like, big heterosexual guys hug me in airports because they say to me that was, like, the most spiritually deep thing they ever saw on TV. And they aired it around the clock, and it was George Harrison and some, you know, 26-year-old kid talking about the afterlife the day he died.
So
cool. The fact that it was so wrong at the time wound up being
so
really,
right.
Really right.
Yeah.
It just took years for the reality to reveal itself.
Yeah, yeah. What a fantastic story. I'm reminded of the time when I had the privilege of interviewing James Brown. And his manager phoned me afterwards and said, hey, like, just wanted to know how it went. And I said, oh, it was fantastic. You know, it was after the concert, went up to his suite. You know, we talked for about a half an hour. She stopped me. She said, half an hour? Are you kidding me? I said, no, about 30 minutes. He has never given a 30-minute interview ever. What happened?
Wow.
And, you know, he's so cantankerous most of the time. As soon as he found out that this interview was mostly about the spiritual stuff and the journey, and he found out that I used to be a pastor, he just warmed right up and just let it all fly. And I think that was maybe one of the moments, John, where I realized that interviewing celebrities about stuff that's a little deeper than their last film, it matters to me. So anyway.
Well, it matters to smart people of faith as well. You know, I think in my country, everyone's tired of only seeing religious twits and hypocrites on the TV.
Right.
And these charlatans, these shakedown artists. So yeah. Anytime someone has a chance to talk about faith with some measure of intelligence and thoughtfulness, you know, it's very rare.
Well, if that happens during my interviews, it's a complete accident. I think I would be the goofy guy, maybe, that you were with George, even though I didn't see that. Maybe I just saw the recut version. But I would be that guy with James Taylor. What was your time with James like?
Oh, I met him a couple times. He's just, you know, exactly how you'd expect. He's completely lovely and soft-spoken and very intelligent. And he has a, you know, he's a guy who's been in recovery. I mean, you know, he was into some hard stuff back in the day, and he's a man of grace and gentleness and dignity and strength, and he's just a really, you know, cool, laid-back guy. I mean, he's James Taylor. He's that laid-back. You know, you think the camera goes off and he's like, you know, freebasing and smacking hookers, but no, he's really James Taylor all the time.
Oh, man. I would imagine it would actually be a hard interview. I was trying to think of somebody I've had on in the last 10 years who didn't give me the energy that I really want, or, you know, gave me the one-word answers or the, I don't know, whatever. I still think I'd be a little silly interviewing James.
I can't imagine anyone doing your show unless they wanted to do it. You know, a lot of times you get these sullen celebrities who are on PR tours, but a show like this, no one's going to enter into lightly, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you must meet all different types. I find myself debating lots of right-wingers on American TV.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Jerry Falwell. You were 28 years old and debated Jerry Falwell? Really?
Well, yeah, it was on Bill Maher's show, and you know, he kept talking about, I mean, how Bush was, he was so pro-life and pro-life and pro-life and pro-life. And I finally said, yeah, well, you support the death penalty, so you're pro some life. And you could hear his sphincter tighten across the studio floor. But, you know, you know, when I met him, I just realized he's got his racket. I my people come from Virginia, and I understand that whole racket. And
yeah.
And he also, yeah, I could tell he wasn't healthy at the time, so I didn't want to get too mean with him.
A couple of weeks ago, Penn Jillette intimated to me that as far as he was concerned, the most irritating atheist in his books was Bill Maher. Now, you know, you were on his show 4,000 times. Are you still, you know, tight with Bill? Is anybody tight with Bill? Have you ever spoken an ill word about Bill?
Well, I think, yeah, sure. I love Bill Maher, and he's been very good to me, and I totally, you know, I thought a lot of his movie he made was quite brilliant. I think that the point I always make with Bill is that you got to stop confusing Jesus with his unauthorized fan clubs. And, you know, I don't confuse God and religion. And I think too often we do that. And it's one thing to say, oh, religious people are responsible for all the murder and rape and violence and theft in history. Go ahead and say that, but it's not true. What I try to point out to guys like Bill is, the overwhelming majority of Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu people in the world are getting along fine right now. It is the right-wing fundamentalist fringes of every party, of every religion, rather, that are causing all the problems. The extreme fundamentalist Christians, Jews, and Muslims are the ones who are causing all this violence. So, you know, I don't blame Jodie Foster for what her fans do. I'm not going to blame Jesus for what his crazy fans do. But there's a difference between religious people and fundamentalist religious people, because fundamentalist religious people think that they're on God's side and that makes them allowed to do anything they want. So I try and draw distinctions, because most of the religious people I meet, including conservatives, are really nice people.
I actually am a fan of almost everything Bill has said in regards to religion, because if the subdomain, or I guess, I don't know, what do you call it, a hidden domain, another domain we use for my radio show site, it's, you know, it's drewmarshall.ca. But if you go to tohellwithreligion.com, that'll take you right to my show. And the frustration that Bill has, I agree with. And, you know, he's got his style and his shtick. And that movie Religulous was fantastic.
What frustration of Bill's do you speak of?
Well, everything that you speak of, John. Really, it's about it's the issues with the fan club. It's the hypocrisy. It's the numerous intellectual faux pas that anybody on TV makes who stands for religion.
They only put idiots on. But I'll stand up for religion and theory. I mean, we have no way of knowing how many murders, rapes, and crimes weren't committed because someone was afraid of hell. Mm. You know, in Democracy in America, Tocqueville talks about how religion was really the beginnings of democracy, because prior to religion, if you were born poor, you stayed poor. If you were rich, you stayed rich. There was no capitalism. Religion was the first time in European culture that a poor-born person could rise in stature and through a religious institution and become more powerful than the nobleman. So religion was a game changer. It was very positive in many ways. But fortunately, I mean, or unfortunately, in this ratings-driven news cycle, the only kind of religious people that are going to get on the TV are not the ones who are helping the homeless and taking care of sick people and doing hospice work and going into war zones and protesting nukes. The religious people are going to get on TV are going to be the douchebags.
But, John, you know, we're in this time where people are debating religion versus spirituality. There's some spoken word YouTube video that went viral and millions of people saw it. I can't remember the guy's name, but it was this whole, you know, I love Jesus, but I hate religion thing. Yeah. Does that talk drive you nuts, or do you get it?
I get it.
I'm spiritual, not religious. I mean, do you sort of have to play that card all the time in the world you live in?
You know, I have respect for religion, but I don't currently belong to a fan club at the moment.
Right.
I don't see why you have to choose one or the other. I think the whole point of faith is like sexuality. It's do what works for you. Just don't be a tool to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. You have done many, many things, which I don't want to waste time bragging about how awesome you are, because I have so many great questions that I want to ask you. Yes, I just call my questions great. Coyote Ugly, CSI, Providence Becker, Michael Richardson, Beyond Belief, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it just goes on and on. And by the way, here's a highlight for everyone, folks. This gentleman here received the award for Outstanding New York City Monogamist at Lincoln Center.
No, I was actually a monologist.
Oh, who's, sorry.
Not as monotonous as monogamous.
Right. My apologies. Yeah. How much of your parents' programming have you carried on with, and how much have you let go? Because that's part of your shtick, is your dad was was he not a Franciscan dude and your mom was a nun?
Yes, that's correct. That's why I do stand-up, because I can't afford the therapy I actually need. With anything with your parents, it's about keeping the best and dropping the rest, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about, you know, hanging on to the best part of your parents and dropping their hang-ups, because 9 times out of 10, your parents' hang-ups was just someone else's hang-ups that they were taught. So, you know, my parents their faith was strong enough that they weren't going to care about what their kids did once they grew up. They raised them in the Catholic Church, and then when their kids grew up and did their own thing, they respected it. So for me, that's like faith. Trying to control your kids and, you know, mandate that they have the same superstitions as you is the opposite of faith.
John, have you had the dark night of the soul? Have you struggled at any time ferociously with your faith to the point where you're laying awake at night wondering if there really is a God kind of stuff?
Of course, all the time. Who that's interesting, either a believer or an atheist, hasn't questioned everything. But I don't think the opposite of faith is doubt. I think doubt's a part of faith. I think the opposite of faith is certainty. And if these people who know,
have you been listening to my show? Have you been on my website creeping on me? Where are you coming with this? You're freaking me out, man. You can't be a me. Don't be a me.
Well, I'm a believer. I'm not an atheist. So, you know, I guess I'm not that you, right?
Oh, what a cruel, heartless punk, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I'm saying seriously. There's, you know, I mean, it's nice because I just keep thinking, like, you know, why don't believers and atheists just get along and show that that's possible?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, when I did that show, the Kamau Bell show you referenced with Jamie, we're friends. We just decided to go out there and tell jokes and get along. And I mean, if atheists want to be taken as seriously as religious folks in the culture, I mean, if atheism wants to be taken seriously, you know, then what they got to do is work with religious people. I mean, the worst thing atheists can do is stand on the sidelines and just heckle and call religious people dumb losers. I think it's a matter of, you know, working side by side and forming partnerships.
Last July, I highlighted a friend of mine wrote a book called The Skeptical Believer, Telling Stories to Your Inner Atheist. And the premise for one of his books is that doubt is more compatible with faith than certainty. Doubt is more compatible
Absolutely.
With faith than certainty. I've been on a crazy journey in the last few years reading some fantastic stuff. that I guess talks about exactly the same sort of thing that you've just been talking about, where doubt is more compatible with faith than certainty. So it's very interesting to hear your take on things, and obviously that's why I resonated so quickly with you, watching what you do. So good for you. Gay marriage isn't special rights, it's equal rights. Special rights are for political churches who don't pay taxes. Best quote of the year. You are a walking bumper sticker, dude. You have the best material. Right. I am just now an absolutely annoying, creepy fan.
It's good to be a freak with you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to do the show. Let's do it again sometime. Really have fun.
John, thank you, man. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
All right. John Fugelsang on The Drew Marshall Show. His last name is spelled Fugelsang. Fugelsang.com. John Fugelsang. Very interesting fellow. Fellow, as they say. I don't know who says that, but they say that.
I have no idea who those people are.
Stay with us. Hey, folks, I want to tell you about the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA, except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our 1250 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?